This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 96. Hey everyone, we have a special episode this week. But before I get to this week's episode, I want to take a moment to say thank you for the incredible support that I've received over the last few days. And if you're a fan of the podcast, then you've likely heard the news that I've decided to double down on my mission of developing the next generation of HR leaders. And we often hear the feedback that HR leaders need to have more business acumen, that we need to be more strategic, that we need to be able to influence and communicate with impact. And of course, we need to be able to create value through our HR initiatives. Yet most HR functions do not have the time, the resources, or the know-how to make this important development investment in their next-gen HR leaders. And this is exactly why I've created the Next-Gen HR Accelerator program. The Next-Gen HR Accelerator is an intensive four-week virtual cohort-based program designed to equip next-gen HR talent with the skills, mindset, and tools they need to become strategic business leaders. This innovative and pragmatic program combines interactive lectures, action reflection labs, 360 feedback, personality assessments, and personalized coaching to develop HR leaders' capabilities and business acumen and elevating their strategic thinking and influencing skills. Next-gen HR leaders from leading companies like Verizon, Cardinal Health, General Mills, Prudential, and AbbVie have all benefited from this transformative program, elevating their HR team's strategic capabilities and business impact. The good news is the next cohort for the program will kick off on September 10th through October 3rd. That's September 10th through October 3rd. We're already signing up participants and organizations for this next cohort. Of course, space is limited and we do expect to sell out. So if you'd like to learn more about the Next Gen HR Accelerator, you can go to futureofhr.com where you can request a brochure to be sent to your inbox, or you can email me directly at jp@futureofhr.com. And I'd be happy to jump on a call and tell you more about the program. Beyond the Next Gen HR Accelerator program, I am consulting with CHROs to help them improve the effectiveness of their HR functions and elevate the talent practices in their organizations. If you are looking to take your HR function or talent practices to the next level, I'd love to have a conversation and see how I can help you get there faster and with more impact. And last but not least, I'm available for speaking engagements and other custom workshops, and I'm so grateful that I'll be speaking at three internal HR conferences this summer and looking forward to doing more in the near future. Thank you so much for your incredible support, and I look forward to hearing from you or having you be a part of the Next Gen HR Accelerator program on September 10th. I also want to take a moment to thank our episode sponsor, Deeper Signals. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessments platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. I'm a big fan of their assessments because they accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. But don't take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for yourself. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's future P-O-D. And take the Core Drivers Assessment for free. And with that, let's get to this week's episode. So what happens when you combine two of the best HR podcasts into one podcast? You're about to find out as the Modern People Leader Podcast and the Future of HR Podcast come together for a very special episode and to share our insights from over 270 interviews. If you're not familiar with the Modern People Leader podcast, it's a terrific podcast, and I recommend that you check it out. And in this episode, which is actually a dual episode, here's what you can expect. In the first half of the episode, Daniel and Steven from Modern People Leader will interview me. Then in the second half of the episode, we flip the script, and I interview Daniel and Steven about their key learnings throughout their 180 interviews they've done for Modern People Leader. This was a fun conversation with Steven and Daniel as we discussed the Next Gen HR Accelerator program and why it's a game changer for developing HR leaders, the what, who, and how model of great HR leadership, why every HR leader should embrace a fail fast, learn, and adapt approach to their work, the definition of a modern people leader, the value of radical candor in HR and why it matters, and why early stage and startup HR leaders need to move with agility and speed and much, much more. So drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into the Modern People Leader interview with me as their guest.
You're listening to the Modern People Leader podcast. Today's episode will be a part of our People Leader series, where we go behind the scenes with today's top HR leaders and talk to them about how they've gotten to where they're at and what they really do every day. Hope you enjoy.
JP, welcome to the Future of HR Modern People Leader crossover episode. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, Daniel. Hey, Steven.
Hey, JP. It's fun to be together. We've talked about this for a while. So I'm
it's like
super
4 months
excited.
In the making or something like that. It's been
something
a while.
At least. Yeah, this is the, I think, in my opinion, the two most powerful HR podcasts coming together to sort of build a podcasting empire. That's what we're hoping to do here. I want to make sure everyone in HR knows that we're trying to take over the podcasting world in HR.
We're manifesting that. I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
I love
yes.
this energy. That's awesome. All right, well, let's do good news stories. So, JP, I know you've listened to the show. Every episode, we start the exact same way, and that's by sharing a personal or work-related story to kick things off. And we like for our guests to go first.
Sure. So, some good news in our household. My daughter recently decided she wanted to go to a private school, which was not good news for my bank account, but it is the right decision for her, I think, at this phase. And so, she's pretty excited to go to a smaller private school starting next year. So that's some pretty awesome news. And then it's just summertime, frankly. And so the kids are around and it's fun and time to hit the pool and barbecue and all those good things.
That's great news. And as a kid, it's always fun to, it's always nice when you have that transition either from like elementary to middle or middle to high school or just changing schools. I had all of those experiences and it's pretty exciting. So that's some good news. Steven, do you want me to go next? Or do you want to take it?
Yeah, go okay. for it.
So on Saturday is my wife Tori's birthday, and we've got not some like huge plans, but we're getting like five couples together. We're renting out a cabana at a pool downtown, Hotel Van Zandt, which is like kind of fancy. But yeah, it should be a fun day by the pool, and it's always fun celebrating birthdays.
Yeah, I was about to ask a question, but it would have been related to age, and I know better than to do that. So I'll leave it at happy early birthday to...
It's the big 3-0.
I wasn't going to be the one to ask, but I thought this was the big one.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, wow. There's so much great news already. Mine is work-related. So my job over the years has literally taken me all across the world, but I have never been to Boston until now. So that's my good news this week. I love like one of the passions that JP, I discovered after selling my company last year was just like traveling on my own and exploring. And while this is a work trip, it kind of fills that same bucket for me. And it's a place that I've never been. So, and I feel like Boston's kind of like a bucket list type of place, like a city that I should have already been to, honestly. But, I'm here. So client meetings this weekend in Beantown.
That's awesome. It's really walkable. It's a beautiful time of year to be in Boston, so you're lucky. And sounds like the NBA Finals might be happening there tonight, so hopefully you get to a Celtics-Mavericks game.
Oh,
go Mavs.
My goodness. Go Mavs.
And there's a strong HR network there. So,
oh, that's sure right.
Yeah.
Hey,
y'all. We've got one last good news story from our sponsor, Great Place to Work. Do you ever see the list, like the Fortune 100 best companies to work for, and wonder if your company could make the cut? Well, you don't have to wonder anymore. You can take the first step by getting Great Place to Work certified. Great Place to Work is the global authority on workplace culture and the brains behind many of the prestigious lists that you see out there. Their proprietary model and survey will tell you whether or not your people believe that your company is a great place to work. Over 21,000 companies and 20 million employees have gone through this process, and there are literally no downsides to getting certified. It's truly a win-win situation. Here's what could happen. One, which is the biggest win, you get Great Place to Work certified, and your company lands on a Best Companies to Work For list. Two, you get certified, don't make the list, but you can proudly display the badge on your website and recruiting materials. And you can rest easy knowing that your employees have verified that you're a great place to work. And three, which is the worst case, which I don't think is that bad, you don't get certified, but at least you walk away with a ton of employee feedback and insights to improve your culture. If your company is ready to get certified, head over to greatplacetowork.com/MPO and let them know that we sent you. That's greatplacetowork.com/MPO. I've heard your story. Steven hasn't. So I know he'll really enjoy this. So give us the full career story, like what got you into HR and eventually led you to becoming the host of The Future of HR. What was the journey into becoming a podcaster as well?
All right, I'm going to try to give you the condensed version of the story a little bit because I'm getting up there in age. But really, like when I was growing up, my dad was an economist and was really business focused. He was an entrepreneur. So he was really that business aspect of me and business side of me. My mom was a marriage and family counselor. So I kind of grew up with this like yin yang of people and business. And that just resonated with me when I got to college and then found out there was a degree called organizational psychology and people actually got paid to do business and people work, if you will. And so after college, I went to get my PhD. I got a PhD in organizational psychology. And that was an interesting experience in itself. I thought, you know, really it was like I wanted to really get an MBA, I think at times, but realized I probably wouldn't get into a top MBA school. And so I decided to get a PhD. And that was a great choice, honestly. It was a great choice. That led to me getting working at Taco Bell. I left there after a while, went into consulting, actually owned my own design and creative firm when I was late 20s, early 30s, for a little while with a business partner who's an ex-creative director for like Sesame Street and Warner Brothers. So that was a wild experience and really fun trying to build something. But then realized that, you know, I had a wife, we didn't want to settle down, right? Went back to corporate America. And then after doing consulting for a while, I went internal and joined Lenovo, doing talent management work and leadership development. And then from there was vice president at the Brinks Company, heading up talent, driving a transformation there at that company. Got the opportunity to be the head of HR for the US business for 3.5 years in Dallas, which is where we're at today. And that led, you know, to really was an amazing experience being a head of HR, if you will, in that role. But it led me to kind of realize I really love talent, went back to talent. And then have been since been head of talent for Dick's Sporting Goods, McAfee, and then most recently was in private equity as a chief people officer. So I've had a lot of experiences. I feel like I've tried and experienced almost every aspect of HR except for compensation, but I've been in small companies, large companies, companies that are transforming. And that's just given me a lot of agility and variety. That's helped me understand what I really want to do now, which is I'm leaning into my passion around the future of HR. And really, I've launched my own business and it's really tied to the future of HR, which is really about how do we build the next generation of HR leaders? How do we elevate our field? Most recently, I was a private equity chief people officer. But that experience, when I realized, and I started the podcast right around that time, I realized that my passion was something different. That was really what I was really care about was elevating the field and giving back to the next generation of HR leaders. And it may have taken me a year and a half to figure that out, but I've actually left that role and have launched my own company. Really focus on the future of HR. I'll talk more about what I'm doing there, but the podcast is one piece of it, but it's just really about how do we continue to elevate not only our field, HR functions, and talent practices that we use every day. So that's the short story or long story, depending on how you look at it.
First of all, that is an impressive list. You've done a lot and you've worked at some world-class organizations. And I did not know of industrial organizational psychology in college. I was an econ major, kind of like your father. But now looking back, if I had known about it, I think, you know, I would have been like, oh my God, I would have had a similar, I was listening to your story and I was like, ah, if I had found that, I probably would have had the same exact reaction. And on the podcast, what has been the biggest surprise? Like you've been doing podcasting now for about the same number of years that I think you were earlier. You launched Future of HR podcast a little earlier than we did or around the same time. And so what has been the biggest surprise to you, generally speaking?
I mean, when you start a podcast, and I didn't know this, it's really hard to build an audience. In fact, now that I've had a podcast and like study this, people are like, don't start a podcast. That's the advice on the internet. So I was like, really the worst idea possible. But what has surprised me and shouldn't surprise me is just been the generosity of the guests. I mean, people are so willing to come on, share their story, to give back, to really help the field and help the next generation of HR leaders. And I know you guys have the same thing on your podcast. And without the guests, we wouldn't have a great podcast. You know, we are here to be a guide, not a guru, try to bring the best that we can find. And that's been really fun. But it's been amazing to see the reaction, and I'm surprised by the fact that it's gotten so big and that it's global and it's had the impact it's had.
Love it. And so, Daniel, as I was hearing JP's response, how would you answer that question?
Oh, the biggest surprise. Okay. I guess for me, and I know we'll talk about it a little bit later, but the initial motivation was to learn as much about the space. What I didn't realize or didn't expect was to really just love having a podcast. And this has now turned into the business. Now we have a media company. This is something we never intended to do, but this is just like...
Literally, we had no plan to do this. This was not the original North Star at all.
Yeah, and I just get so much joy from this work. The fact that this is my job, to literally sit here on Riverside and chop it up with you, Steven, with JP, and that I'm getting paid to do this, I couldn't ask for a cooler job. So I guess the biggest surprise for me was I didn't expect to find so much joy from this work.
Yeah. So that's exactly mine. Like, I did not think I would love podcasting, because I do not love listening to podcasts. And so, like, I never am sitting there like, oh, you know what I should do? I should listen to a podcast. But I do look at my calendar and I'm like, yes, we've got a podcast with JP today. That's going to be the highlight of my day. And that it's just like such a weird existence for me because of that.
Yeah, I feel that. So JP, you briefly mentioned that you kind of glazed over this, that you left your most recent job and you're building your own company. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, what do you have going on?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, right now it's a little bit in stealth mode. So we're, you know, haven't even gone live. So this podcast, by the time this podcast goes out, I think it'll be much more broader in the community of what I'm doing. But, you know, as I step back and I said, how do I really give back? And so there's kind of three pillars. You know, one is I built what I call a next gen HR accelerator, which is a high potential virtual cohort based program for HR directors to really help them kind of accelerate and be more strategic and have more impact in their roles. And I'm really passionate about this. I feel like we don't invest enough earlier in the pipeline for HR leaders. And part of the challenge that we have when people get to the higher levels or CHROs and we're complaining that they're not strategic or not having the impact we want, it's because we're not making the investments. And so this program is putting my money where my mouth is. It's a continuation of the podcast in some ways. That's one aspect of it. Two, the consulting business I've got going, you know, right now I'm working with an organization, helping them look at their HR operating model, how they're working together, how they can be more effective there. And so that's one of my areas, working with the HR teams to be more effective and elevate the talent. And then third is really the third pillar is around elevating talent practices. So helping organizations put in best in practice talent processes, assessment tools, performance management, you know, whatever those happens to be, those will be part of those areas. So, and the podcast sort of funnels it all. I mean, really, it started it all, and it's kind of the core. I'm with you guys. I love it. It doesn't feel like work to me. You know, it's something that I really enjoy doing. And it's really about, I think, leaving breadcrumbs for what I think great HR is and trying to curate the best minds of HR, the best minds in business. And that's what I've been trying to do with the podcast.
You're really, really good at it. Also, it's not all luck. To your point, it's really, really hard to build an audience. It's super noisy out there. Like at this point in 2020, when we first got started, it was like wide open. It felt like a wide open playing field. Now that's a lot different. And so you continue to stand out. So kudos to you and the team, maybe your wife included, for because it's just you. But yeah, I think it's a testament to your approach and what the show covers. And so on that, I just want to get back to the title of the program. So Next Gen HR Leader Program, I think is what Daniel called it. For you, what does it mean to be a Next Gen HR Leader? What does that look like?
It's something that's sort of built out over time, but a Next Generation HR Leader is one that I would say really understands three things. And I call it the what, the who, and the how. And so the what is, what do they stand for, right? What's their leadership philosophy? What matters to them? What are their values? What do they want to be known for at work? What's that leadership brand? So that what they stand for really matters. The second is who. Who do they identify as? And next generation HR leaders don't identify as people leaders or HR leaders first. It's typically they identify as a business person who happens to be doing HR. And some people hate that term and go back and forth. But the reality is, and you guys hear this in your podcast too, it's about the business. If the business is winning, then of course everyone wins. So you have to have both sides. but it's really who they identify as. And I ask that question because a lot of times who you identify as really starts to set you off on the path of actual behavior change and how you want to show up. So if you identify as a runner, you say, hey, I'm a runner. I probably run. I'm not a runner. I used to run, but not so much. I can't say I'm a runner anymore. But if I said I was a runner, I'm probably going for a run. Someone who does CrossFit will tell you they do CrossFit, right? They identify as they do CrossFit. So it's what you stand for. You know, who do you identify as a business person? And the last is, how do you show up? And how you show up is really around having business acumen. It's around being strategic and a critical thinker. It's around influencing and being a courageous influence and impact and being a courageous communicator. And it's being able to translate that business strategy to an HR strategy. And so for me, those are the kind of core elements of what next gen HR leaders look like and really what I built the program around.
And I know the program is in stealth mode right now. And you only have like, what, 20 people that are in the cohort?
We just got there with the first cohort. We are had 22 people in the cohort, but they were from Verizon, Cardinal Health, Prudential, General Mills, AbbVie, PVH, SRS, API Group. So some really amazing people believed in me enough to say, hey, I'm going to send some HR directors to this program and see how it goes. And so we're wrapping up today, or tomorrow's our last day actually for the program. Oh, so it's gone really well.
That's awesome. You know, you mentioned the three core elements. So the what, the who, and the how. Where do you find that people struggle the most? Is there one of those elements that it's harder to like have them make that mindset shift? Yeah, just curious where people seem to be struggling the most.
That's a really interesting question because I thought I knew, or you know, you think you know till you actually talk to people and go through a program. What I would say is, people are pretty good at identifying their leadership philosophy. People really jumped into that activity and I think understood who they were. But it's how you show up that is the most challenging. It's when the rubber hits the road of will you ask tough questions, challenging questions to a business leader. That's always really hard to do. Will you have that courage to do it? I also saw a lot of people say, we've got limiting beliefs. We've got some imposter syndrome. We're not sure we know enough about the business to speak up. And I think that's one thing that I encourage all HR leaders to really embrace is the fact that your leaders don't have it all figured out either. Your job is to really help them get there and put them, really focus on them and be asking questions that they'll help them make better decisions. And you're not actually pushing back or imposing your view. What you're doing is you're helping to shape their decision making so they make better decisions and the business makes better decisions. So it's a little bit of a reframe, but that has come up more recently. And then learning the business, I think we're getting better in that area, frankly. But what I try to do in the program is actually get detailed of like, how do you really build business acumen? We talk a lot about it, but most people don't teach you how to read a balance sheet or a statement of cash flows and why that matters. And we go through that in the program as well. So hopefully that helps.
So one of the benefits of having a podcast is that you get to talk to a lot of smart people. We're so privileged because we have access to like some of the brightest minds in the people space. And so when you think about everyone that you've had conversations with, which one or two guests have you learned the most from?
Oh, this is a tough question, right? Because you're like, oh no, I love all my children the same, which actually we do love our children the same. But that analogy is kind of a bad one to really think about that deeply because you're definitely not picking a kid. But there are so many great guests. I'm going to call out Matt Breitfelder, you know, at Apollo. That was an earlier episode. It's the top five episode for us. It's about the role of the CHRO. He is just so smart, so eloquent, has such a unique perspective. And one of the things I learned from him there is he talks about HR leaders have no agenda. The only agenda you have as an HR leader is really to build the capability and help your leaders achieve their results. And when you have no agenda, people trust you. They bring you their harder problems. They work with you. They say, hey, look, I know I can bring this problem to Daniel because he doesn't have some personal agenda. He really just wants me to be successful. That's just a snippet of that conversation with Matt, but he's a genius in the field of HR. I think just very, very bright and amazing. The second I would just say, just for fun, I would just throw out there, the second person would be Peter Block. And if you haven't listened to this episode, I highly encourage you to find the Peter Block episode. Peter Block wrote Flawless Consulting, which is your IO psychology person you had to read in grad school. It is a masterclass in how to facilitate contract with a client, but HR applies to HR leaders as well. But Peter basically used all of his principles and techniques and strips me down in the interview to the bare bones and was like, it was raw and vulnerable. He flipped the entire script on me and just basically started role playing where I was like the client, and it was brutal. I almost didn't publish the episode, to be honest, because it just felt so raw and so like vulnerable. But I published it and people's reaction were pretty, I got a lot of emails like, wow, that was pretty incredible. And he's an amazing person. To be able to execute the way he can be so vulnerable and authentic is difficult.
And from that Peter Block episode, what was your big takeaway from that experience? Like if you had to like boil it down to like a framework that he introduced you to or feedback that he gave you when he was stripping you down to the bare bones, like what was that top takeaway from that episode?
He is very big on being authentic and in the moment and calling what he sees and speaking about what's unspoken. He really talks about, you know, he might be saying, well, how do you feel about working with me as a leader? And then be silent, which is really hard to do. And he would basically just say to a leader, like, you know, I don't believe you. Or you may be saying that, but what I see is this, you know, just raw being authentic and truthful and like, maybe we call it radical candor, but he can do it in a way that it's very unique. And I think the best HR leaders are authentic that way, but it takes real practice and real skill and finesse to do that and build a relationship from that and not put in a tough spot.
Throws me back to my Workify days when I was working with Steven. Why did we get on like a big radical candor kick, Steven? And it turned into like this inside joke. We called it rad canned. And do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I do. So my co-founder was in EO and YPO and like all the O's, like all the groups you could possibly be part of. And I think they like would have people that would come in and would like pitch them these ideas, these frameworks. And then he would always like give Workify, which was my startup that I sold last year, as a like guinea pig. And so we worked with all these, and it's kind of cool looking back. But yes, we definitely had a radical candor phase.
I love it. Rad can. There you go.
Rad can. For our listeners, this is definitely an experiment for us. We didn't really have a good plan on how we were going to transition it over to JP, but this is how I'm doing it. JP, the floor is yours. What questions do you have for us?
Awesome. Well, Daniel and Steven, excited to have you on the Future of HR podcast. So thanks for being here. This is a lot of fun. And I think really kudos to both of you for what you built for Modern People Leader. I think it is an amazing podcast and you built a great community around that. So that's what's cool that brought us together. And I love that we all kind of look at this from a view of abundance and say, hey, let's partner, let's work together, let's be friends. You know, we're not competitors here. And we can actually do more together. So my first question for both of you, because I don't know this actually, what inspired you to start the Modern People Leader podcast? You hinted a little bit in our conversation, but I'd love to hear a little bit more.
Yeah. If we go back to, okay, it must have been 2015. I am between my junior and senior year of college. It's the summer. I didn't have an internship lined up, but I knew that I needed one. It was a requirement for my major. I needed an internship. And a couple weeks before summer starts, I get a call from Steven. And he's like, hey, I heard that you're looking for some sort of internship and that you're thinking about going into tech. I just started a company called Workify. It's an HR tech company. At the time, I was like, I don't even know what that means. I don't know what HR tech is. But I was like, yeah, I'm interested. And Steven pitched it to me as like a 4-week trial. He's like, we can try this for 4 weeks. We're family. But I didn't really know Steven growing up. There's a bit of an age gap. So yeah, he pitched this pilot and that 4-week pilot turned into 5 years of me working with Steven. And I did everything from client success work to sales work. I was, you know, sending out sales emails, taking sales calls, taking client calls. And Workify was an employee feedback platform. So I was even giving companies the high level summary of what their feedback was saying and what they should do about it. And through this experience, I saw the impact that you could make with HR tech. We can literally see the data showing that they're improving their ENPS, they're improving connection, that they're improving management, whatever it is that they're measuring, they're making improvements from this data that we're giving them. That was a pretty eye-opening experience. After my 5 years there, I went to Udacity and I was on the enterprise marketing team. I started January, like the first week of January in 2020, and COVID hits. And that's when I had this light bulb moment that I wanted to double, triple down on HR tech. I thought I wanted to start my own HR tech company. So I started reaching out to people leaders to pick their brain, have like, you know, 20, 30 minute calls. And I would present, you know, some problems, and I was trying to narrow it down to one really compelling problem to build a company around. Wasn't able to do that. But at the same time, as a marketing nerd, I'd been listening to a lot of podcasts about podcasting. And I was like, this could be a really fun experiment, but I want to do this with somebody. So I immediately thought of Steven. He has more of the HR background, and I reach out to him, and I'll kind of let Steven take over from here.
Yeah. And I immediately said no. I was like, what are you, a podcast? Like, what are you talking about? The whole SaaS industry, well, with the exception of like Zoom, the tech darlings that like blew up, the pandemic darlings, everyone else is like, does our market even exist? Like, is this here? Like, what is actually going to happen?
And you had just lost like a couple of big clients because of COVID.
Yeah. So one of our clients was Alamo Drafthouse, which is a big movie chain, and they went bankrupt. It was not a good time for me to think about even taking the call. Was not a good time. But I think a Huerta trait that Daniel and I share is persistence. And Daniel is very persistent, particularly when he has like purpose behind, you know, what he wants to do. And so that really kind of got me, to be honest, was Daniel being so convicted. And Daniel had already, because we had reconnected a few months earlier around, because of the changed market, I was wanting to explore new marketing techniques. And I'm a bit of a marketing nerd as well. Like if I were to re-choose a major, I would probably choose marketing. And if I were to re-choose like a C-suite position that I was like always striving to get to, it'd probably be the CMO, not the CEO, just looking at what I love and what I'm good at. And so Daniel had already shared with me kind of this new wave of marketing and this like different approach to B2B SaaS sales. I thought a little bit more about the podcast. I had questions, and Daniel answered all my questions, and I was in. And I was like, look, I can commit to 52 in year one. So we'll do one a week. Because one of the things Daniel had mentioned to me was like, you got to have a lot of content. So if we're going to do this, we've like got to do this. And I was like, cool. Well, this is what I can commit to. Thank God I didn't know then how hard it actually is to do this. And so, because if I had known, I wouldn't have agreed to it. It just was so, we definitely bit off more than we could chew. But to the point earlier, like what I quickly realized is there was like this energy and excitement that I had every time. It was a feeling I got every time we were recording. And so I quickly realized like, ooh, I love this. Now it's a question of what is it going to be? I think those were like the early questions we had, like what exactly are we going to do with this? Because I quickly found out one of my personal reasons on the business side was maybe this will generate sales for Workify. And on the personal side, for me, it was very different to Daniel. Daniel saw this opportunity and this huge change in the market. And
I just wanted to learn. Like I was, I want to be able to sit down with the smartest HR leaders and understand like what the hell is going on.
And for me, these people that we were going, you know, we were hypothetically going to interview, these were like my mentors, my coaches, my friends, my bosses, my clients. I have been so fortunate, JP, to have had access to truly geniuses. Like you said, you know, you described one of your guests as a genius. Like I have had that, and I've had that for my entire professional career. And I know that's a privilege. And for me, if there's a way for me to pay that back, what more scalable, perfect way to do that than a podcast? And so that's why I really got involved.
I love that story. I love how you guys came together. And Daniel, kudos to you for being so resilient, persistent.
Maybe a bit of a pest.
But that's what it takes, right? And I think, you know, committing to 52 episodes was the right strategy because it's easy to quit. And so just kind of, I did the same thing. Like, hey, I'm going to do this for 52 weeks and just see what happens and see if their impact is there. Because people want to believe you're going to be around for a while. And you guys have definitely done that. And you guys have like almost two episodes a week now, I think, right? So you guys are really putting out a lot of content.
Yeah, we've definitely scaled it up. Now we're doing, two a week. And it's like medium stressful, but also really fun. Some weeks we're recording up to like three or four episodes. But yeah, we're getting close to episode 200.
We're inching crazy. Well, We'll celebrate for episode 200. That's insane. Oh, yeah. It's really awesome.
Hey, everyone. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. If you are a fan of the future of HR, then you know that I believe the organization with the best talent wins. So how do you ensure that you are selecting and developing the talent that will help your organization to win? The answer lies in using a scientific, data-driven approach to assessing and developing your talent, and that's where Deeper Signals comes in. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessment platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. Why am I such a big fan of Deeper Signals? With Deeper Signals, you can accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. You can generate personalized action plans and development journeys that equip leaders, individuals, and teams with the insights needed to improve onboarding, help them grow, and increase their overall performance. And the best part, Deeper Signals is affordable, user-friendly, and scalable, making it accessible to organizations of all sizes. No wonder over 400,000 people from over 140 countries have completed their assessments, and companies like Caterpillar and S&P Global are loyal customers. But don't just take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for yourself. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod. That's future P-O-D. And take the Core Drivers Assessment for free. It's normally $65 per assessment, but Deeper Signals has agreed to give Future of HR listeners this limited time opportunity to try the assessment risk-free. So what are you waiting for? Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, P-O-D, and complete the 7-minute core drivers assessment. I know you'll be impressed with the results. And with Deeper Signals, you'll have the scientific, data-driven approach you need to select, onboard, and develop the talent that'll help your organization to win today and into the future. So you guys chose the title Modern People Leader. What does that mean for you, or what does that mean for the guests? Because I think it's got more meaning than just awesome marketing, even though I think it is good marketing.
I think just going back to when I chose the name, I had narrowed it down between like two or three options, and Modern People Leader just seemed to stick the most. And I was like, I love something that I can make into an acronym. Yeah, MPL. So one thing we do on every show actually is a segment called Rapid Fire Questions. And one of the questions that we ask every single guest is, how do you define a modern people leader? What are the traits and characteristics? So after asking this question 150, 160 plus times, we've actually been able to narrow it down to four common characteristics. So one is empathetic, which I feel like is probably pretty obvious, especially if you're going into HR, but you have to understand your people. You have to understand what they want. But I think with a caveat, and this is something that Andrew Bartlow, one of our former guests, said, he said, you want to be an emotional colander and not an emotional sponge, or else it's just going to become too much to sustain. So one would be empathetic. Two would be flexible. We heard a bunch of different words to kind of describe this, whether it was curious, adaptable, dynamic, but I think flexible is the best way to put it, especially when flexibility is something that people are really craving today from their employer. And then storytellers. So modern people leaders are excellent communicators, and they have a gift for telling stories, whether they're communicating to their people team, their board, employees, or it's external and they're on a podcast like this. They know the power that storytelling has, especially when advocating for their people programs and articulating the ROI. And I think of the Katie Burks of the world. So she was the former CPO at HubSpot. She's a master at this. Or the Dina Uptons, who, you know, formerly was at Drift. Now she's at Dandy. Pretty early on during COVID, she and her people team had branded Digital First, which was the decision that they made on how they were going to operate. And the way that she communicated that story and how COVID was this one-way door and we could never go back, I was like, man, they really have like a compelling story behind this change they've made at their company. And then business-minded, you mentioned it. Like, this is one of the core components of being a next-gen leader. But yeah, this is probably the number one thing we hear on the show. And over the last 8-9 months, we've had a lot of off-the-record conversations with people leaders. And this seems to be something they struggle with, or at least like there's a perception that they're not business minded. And, you know, there seems to be two camps of CHROs or CPOs. You have the CPOs that are that go-to person for their CEO. And then you have the others that feel like they're kind of being shut out by the rest of the exec team. And what that looks like is during the board meeting, they have the last slide and maybe they don't even get to their slide. So yeah, that's something that we hear a lot of the people leader community struggling with. And I don't think that it helps that there's like no standard definition of what it means to be a CPO today, because CEOs and boards have a wide variety of expectations and past experiences in CPOs. So yeah, those are the four that come to mind. I could probably keep going, but I'm going to stop right there.
It's awesome. Steven, anything to add?
No, I mean, I came off mute when Daniel was describing the storytelling. And, you know, the interesting thing to me is that some of the best pitches I've ever heard have been from CHROs and chief people officers, like Dina Upton. She came on our show and it was so crisp. It was so clear that everything was tied to the business. It's like she had pitched it, pitch practice like 100 times. It was perfect. It honestly was perfect. And this is at a time when like hybrid wasn't even a thing yet. Like they were very, this is like weeks after the pandemic, they went digital first. And so even the language she was using, it was just so carefully chosen. And so that's like, for me, when I see a modern people leader, like, you know, because when you hear the ideas, when you hear the things they're working on, they just talk about it in a different way. And as we kind of reflected on it, it's the storytelling. It's the ability to have a clear problem and a clear narrative around how you're going to solve the problem and always bringing it back to the business. So yeah, I was just going to add that.
Oh, that's great. It's a great point. That's a really good definition. I love that you guys have been asking that question. And it's funny, I have a signature question too. So we've both been asking that. And I don't know, we must have read the same book, Daniel, to come up with these ideas. But I think you guys nailed it. I mean, those are really, really important, all four of those elements. So I love that piece. And I think the storytelling, what I'm seeing is there's more and more CHROs that have come from a communications background. You know, I know Katie Burke at HubSpot was communications, right? Marketing. So that is a really important part of employee communications. And I think you're seeing more CPOs have to do external communications as well and think about how do we respond to social issues, other things that are happening in the market. So interesting. Let's talk more about this. I think one thing's interesting about our audience is we don't have complete demographics, but my belief is that my audience is a little bit more Fortune 500 because of my network and the people I bring on. I think you guys are a little bit more tech, early stage startup, what I call people operations, right? Chief people officers, which is different. And so because you talk to a lot more of those kind of up and coming, awesome, amazing brands, those chief people officers really have a different perspective in terms of the priorities, the challenges, what their businesses are facing. Tell me more about what you guys have seen from the what it's like to be a chief people officer, early stage kind of tech startup. And I know, Stephen, you were a founder, so you kind of can speak to it from experience. But how is that different from like being in a more established, bigger company?
I'm going to take this one because I love this question. And it's interesting. I spent the first half of my career catering to kind of your audience and your guests. So I worked for Ernst & Young and I consulted companies like Coca-Cola, Nokia, American Express, like really, really big brands, like Fortune 100 type brands. Then I went and jumped ship to my last client and that was Goldman Sachs. And I did corporate HR for Goldman and they did things. There was a Goldman way. There is a Goldman way. And it's very much like a enterprise kind of mindset. Well, the second half of my career has been all startup, either a single, like a solopreneur type of company or the high-tech startup I launched. And now we meet with a lot of startups. I consult startups. And so it's not so much, I think the priorities and the challenges are very similar. For me, it's more so what it takes to be successful. That is what's different and how work needs to get done within the organization is completely different, particularly with the early stage startup. The phase from, call it one employee to 500 is what I'll consider like the really, really challenging. How you do things really, really matters because there's limited resources, right? And your team, you're talking about teams of two or three people, not 30, 40, 50 people. One of the things that I talk to my clients about is that being stage appropriate, it's everything. You cannot take the Goleman way and try to work that way, that, you know, pursuit of perfection, and work that way in a 10-person startup, Series C startup, because perfection is the enemy of good. Or like, I forget what that saying is, and Daniel knows I get the sayings wrong all the time, but I really do believe that. And that is top of the list of why many startups fail, is because they can't get a product, they can't achieve product market fit, and they're focusing on the wrong things. And so that to me is the biggest difference. And there are two groups of HR practitioners that we see. I mean, there's probably more, but I'm oversimplifying because we don't have a lot of time left. But we see a group of HR practitioners that are really pushing the envelope. They're very much focused on innovation, and they're able to do that because they have CEOs that are demanding that, right? We've got to find a different way. We've got to find a better way. We've got to incorporate AI. We've got to build a culture of AI in this entire company because we're an AI startup. So then HR immediately goes and starts to do things, even though nothing is figured out yet. They start to try to figure things out. Like, how are we going to, you know, and Gianna Driver at Exabeam is a perfect example of that. And she failed and got it wrong once. And then she quickly tried a couple quarters later and got it right. It's going to be years before some of these larger companies even start to test the water with AI because of data issues and compliance issues and all these things that bigger companies have to struggle with. And so the first camp is like the practitioners that are pushing the envelope. The second camp are those that are stress testing the solutions and the future of work, because for it to really have legs and have lasting power in business, it has to cater to the enterprise. And I know that to be true because I've lived, you know, like Daniel said earlier, I'm what I would call an old head. Like, I've seen multiple cycles and I've seen generally how it works. And you need that also. Our ecosystem needs that as well. But very different. It's interesting because we talk to more so those in the first camp, but we do have enterprise guests, and the nature of the conversation is very different, to your point.
Yeah, I think the distinction you made though is kind of like how the work gets done, what that people leader has to do. I'm hearing clearly fail fast, learn, try again. And you're right, because you don't have a lot of time. You don't have a lot of resources. And so if you could ever try to make everything perfect, you'll never get to your to-do list, right? And sometimes even my private equity CPO role is like, look, I better get this done today because tomorrow I'll be like five other things. So I better just push myself to get this one thing out because no one else is going to do it. So I think that's a really good distinction. But I love how you do a really good job of bringing out and letting the CPOs talk about what they're working through. And I think that's really good and really what makes one of your podcasts really unique in that way. All right. So my next question is a little bit of fun. I was trying to throw a little fun into here, a little bit different question. So imagine, Daniel and Steven, that you're tasked with creating an HR time capsule to be opened in 2050. What would you include to represent the current state of the field? And if you are, by the way, a Gen Z millennial, they're like, who the hell, or even younger than Gen Z, don't know what a time capsule is. It's a really old idea that people would put stuff into a box that represented the time period. And so I realized no one's doing time capsules, but AI gave me this question. I thought it was a good one. So I wanted to give it to you and see what you guys thought about. What would represent our field if we put a time capsule today?
I'll go first because I'm pretty sure Daniel is thinking of an answer. So I'm going to go in the time capsule. I would put a light bulb. And this is a cheeky thing that I would be putting in there, because this light bulb would represent the era or the day when we realized that work could be done a fundamentally different way. And I think 50 years from now, the way we work, from the work week to work hours to like these fundamental constructs, are going to change. And I think a lot of the whiplash that we're experiencing of going back and forth is just normal kind of turbulence when you're going through times of change, of tremendous change like we're going through. So mine would be a light bulb.
I like it.
No, this is a tough question. I think I have a couple of answers, but the first one that comes to mind is an employee badge. Like, I do think that there's always going to be some form of in-person work. But I think in 50 years, when I think about, you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, and I don't even know what the generations after that are called, but it's going to just like keep progressing further and further with how people prefer to work. I think that if today it's a pretty digital world, in the future, I imagine, I don't know if y'all have seen like those Apple, what's it called? Apple,
oh man.
Oh my God.
I know we're all like what? Vision goggles, vision.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever it's called.
Vision something.
Have you seen people where they literally are like going like this in the air? I think that that's probably what the future is going to look like. Like we're all going to be in person collaborating, but we're going to be in these like virtual environments. So I put an employee badge in there because I don't know how many people are going to be badging into their offices in 50 years.
I love it. What came to mind for me, those are all really, really good. And I love the light bulb and the badge. And I was thinking, you know, your typical performance management end of year rating. Then 25 years or so, we're probably going to figure that out. It's going to get different. Like, I think we'll have data to measure the entire team's performance and not just single out one person. Because my big kick on that is everything's done in team. Everything's a project. Yet we're going to reward Daniel or the leader or Steven. But yet the team is what got it done. So
yeah,
a shift of that mindset would be helpful.
We actually had David Hanrahan on the show about 2 or 3 months ago. And that's what he came onto the show to talk about, the idea of team performance reviews. He falls into that camp that Steven was referring to, the folks that are really trying to innovate. So he's tested out a couple different versions of team performance reviews, once at Eventbrite and now once at Flare, the company's at now. And yeah, he's designed this system to figure out what are the high performing teams, what are the low performing teams, and how can I get the leaders of our company in a room together talking about what they're doing that's working and not working. Yeah, I think there's something there. And we've also had, you know,
we should introduce JP to David. I think you guys would have a great chat.
I listened to this episode. He's great. It seems like a great guy. Definitely. So follow him on LinkedIn as well.
He is so smart.
I love how innovative he is. All right, look, usually I'm going to ask you, we don't have a lot of time left, but I'm going to actually forego, guys. I'm sorry. I'm not going to ask what's the future of HR, because I do want to ask what's next for Modern People Leader and what you guys are working on.
I can take this one, Steven. There's a lot going on with the Modern People Leader. We're going to continue bringing on amazing HR leaders and sometimes some pretty like influential thought leaders. We've got like one really exciting guest that's coming up next month. I don't want to say the name of the person because I'm going to jinx it and it's not going to happen. But we have some really great guests lined up. And then we're also thinking about potentially having one or two in-person events a year. And we're looking at September for our first MPL live event. So we would have a live podcast, maybe like, you know, a Q&A, maybe like a panel. And then, you know, just getting together with our community. Because as of now, everything has been virtual. We've done a couple of dinners, but outside of that, we haven't really connected in person with the people that listen to our show. Right now, it's just like a number on a dashboard, and we want to change that. And then we're also thinking about how do we serve the chief people officer when it comes to community. There are so many great communities out there for more of like the generalist, but there's nothing that's built specifically for the CPO. And there are a couple, that, and that's a lie. There are a couple communities out there, but like what's like an elevated version of that? So that's something we're toying around with. We haven't set a date on when that'll launch or when we'll do that, but it's something we're thinking about.
Awesome. You guys are doing amazing work, and this was a fun podcast. Thank you for being on the Future of HR and vice versa. I love that we did this.
I have a very short future of work.
All right, let's do it. I want to make sure that I don't want it to be late.
Okay, right. I'm going to go first because I might drop, but I'm going to go with the one word or phrase that I believe will define the future of work in the next 5 to 10 years, rapid acceleration of change. That's my one phrase.
Boom. I'm going to say Wild Wild West.
I like that.
I can't even fathom what the world is going to look like in 10 years. I feel like it's going to be vastly different, but there's just like so much change that's going to happen, and the HR leaders that can keep up and adapt, but also stay grounded in their business and what's going to move the needle for their business. Like those are the people leaders that are going to really thrive. So yeah, it's going to be the Wild Wild West, but
Wild Wild West, rapid acceleration of change. Awesome. You guys are great. This was a ton of fun. Thank you for having me on your podcast and being on my podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Daniel and Steven from Modern People Leader for being great hosts and guests this week. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Angela Lane and Sergey Gorbatov, who'll be joining us to share their key insights from their new book, Move Up or Move On, 10 Secrets to Develop Your Career. Both Angela and Sergey are two of the brightest minds in the world of talent and career development, and this is an amazing book that truly is a must read. I was lucky enough to get an early copy, and I can tell you, this is the book that I wish I had when I had started my career. It is that good. This is a great conversation with two bright talent minds. You won't want to miss it. Thanks again for listening to Future of HR and being part of our community.